Hey, everybody. Good morning. Hope you had a great week, a terrific 4th of July. I don't know about you, but I have all my fingers and toes. That feels like a win after the 4th of July. I hope you came back with all yours as well. And we are continuing a series that we're calling Trending, and we're taking kind of current topics that are happening in our world and in our culture, and we're talking about not only how you can be informed on those topics, but what God might have to say around those issues and how we can think about them. Last week, if you weren't here, Dustin, who's our Connections pastor, he spoke for the very first time on the weekend and did a great job. And he talked about automation and stuff like self-driving cars and what does that reveal in us, especially when insecurity starts to climb out of us. And he did that from this guy named Solomon, who wrote in the Jewish scriptures a book called Ecclesiastes. And if you missed it, I'd encourage you to go check it out. It was really, really good. And just encourage Dustin. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. We are kind of taking the topic this week in a different direction because the topic this week is SCOTUS, or the Supreme Court of the United States. And some of you, didn't know what SCOTUS meant till like right now, and you're welcome. Really, what I want to do is spend just a couple minutes talking about what is the Supreme Court and why is it trending right now, because I know that some people in the room, you're like news junkies, you're like into politics, you know all this stuff, and you're like salivating that we're going to talk about this in church. And some of you are like, I don't follow news at all, I have no idea. And so I just want to set a baseline level of understanding that maybe even this week, as the topic comes up more and more, you have a little bit more knowledge about it. So let me just break it down for you. The Supreme Court itself is comprised of 9 justices. 4 of those justices have to decide on what it is they're going to talk about or what it is they're going to review, but it's made up of 9 justices. And the reason that that's kind of unique here is because those justices have lifetime appointments. In most of the political offices that we have in our nation, there is some amount of time for each term. And in certain offices, like the presidency, there is a term length where you can only serve a certain number of terms. With the Supreme Court, you could see justices serve an entire generation. Since the Supreme Court has existed, the average term is about 16 years. That's how long a justice on average has served. But since 1970, that number has grown significantly to nearly 30 years in the last 40 plus years. And so when someone moves out of the Supreme Court seat and somebody else moves in, it's a big deal. In addition to that, they kind of review lower court cases. So the way that our justice system works, if you didn't know, is that in any particular legal case, if a decision is made, you can appeal that decision to the next level of courts. You can do it because evidence wasn't considered, because it was done incorrectly. There's a bunch of different reasons, but the Supreme Court, based on those 4 people that would agree this is a case we need to deal with, any case that they want, they can take up and review. And their review of those lower courts has the ultimate legal authority for our nation. So what happens not only in that case, there's no more appeals when that ruling comes down from the Supreme Court. That's the ruling. Not only that, but it informs this legal concept called precedent, where court cases that happen after that are related to it, now have to keep in mind the decision that the justices made. So it's a really big deal. That's what it is. Now, why is it trending? Well, because Justice Anthony Kennedy, he just announced that he was retiring and that he would be stepping down at the end of the month of July. He has served on the Supreme Court for 30 years, huge, influential justice, particularly because we find ourselves in a kind of politically polarized moment in our culture. Did you know that? Were you aware? To give you just a small little evidence of that, when a Supreme Court justice is considered, they have to be confirmed by the Senate. You know what his vote was when he was confirmed 30 years ago in 1988? It was unanimous. He was unanimously confirmed to the Supreme Court. I feel like there is nothing we could get the government to unanimously agree on right now. Like world peace, somebody would be like, not quite. You know, like we are just a polarized culture. And Justice Anthony Kennedy, he had this really unique track record where even though he was brought on with a lot of assumptions that he was very conservative, he was sort of a swing vote. And in an increasingly polarized world, he would rule in different sides of a particular issue. In some issues, he was with more progressive, liberal-leaning judges. In 2015, not only was he in the majority opinion, he wrote the majority opinion to affirm and legalize same-sex marriage across our nation. He also, back in 1992, was in the majority opinion that affirmed the current legal understanding of abortion in Roe versus Wade. And then on the other side, he also was in the majority opinion that removed all limits on corporations making political spending to political campaigns. He also was in the majority opinion that stopped the Bush-Gore recount in the early 2000s, putting President Bush in office. So he's lived in kind of both sides. And so when any current sitting justice is moved, it's a big deal. When one like this is moved and a different kind of justice is put in that place, it's a really big deal. Most people, the thing that they think is kind of hanging in the balance right now is how we think about abortion in our nation. And the way we understand current abortion law and the way that a new justice with the Supreme Court might review a case that would come to them that could potentially change the view. And then in addition to that, tomorrow, President Donald Trump has said he is going to announce his pick for the vacancy. So this has been an issue, but it's going to be an even bigger one this weekend. And for some of you, you knew all that. You know way more. You could probably correct something I've already said. But for some of you, that's all new information. And hopefully, it'll give you an opportunity to have some conversations this week with coworkers, or have some conversations this week with family members or neighbors. Because we want to be actually aware of what's happening in our world and in our culture. And I know that for some of you, the idea that President Donald Trump is going to be the one to appoint the next justice, you are thrilled by that. It's the reason you voted for him. And then for some of you, you are devastated by that. And you're really scared about what this means, not just this appointment, but the legal proceedings that are going to take place on the other side of it. And what I want to make sure of is that we understand as a community following Jesus, it is a good thing that in this room we have Democrats and Republicans, that we have independents, that we have people that don't agree on every political issue. That's a good thing. And we're not here to champion one political cause. We're here to champion a cause that's far more important. And so in just a minute, we're going to spend some time talking about what this, I think, reveals inside of us, and this moment in our future, this moment that we're going to read about, where I think justice is ultimately going to be satisfied in our heart, in our life, and in the universe. I'm going to pray for us, though, before we get started. And if you've never been here before, never heard me speak, I pray kneeling. And the reason that I do that today is because as followers of Jesus, we get the opportunity to pray for our leaders. We're called to. And this is a big moment in our world. And I want to pray for that. And I want to pray that our hearts would be maybe oriented in a different way to remember what the stakes are of our connection to God with eternity. Would you pray with me? Jesus, thank you so much for the freedom that we have as a nation to be able to celebrate last week, to be able to come together today, to be able to talk about these kinds of issues. Thank you for the freedom that even tomorrow, as an appointment is announced, not everyone has to agree on it, and that's okay. But God, there is no ruler that's ever been in power, great, good, bad, or horrible, no ruler that's ever been in power that you haven't used. And so I pray, God, that you would use our leaders. I pray that you would give them wisdom and insight. I pray that the Supreme Court justice nomination would be one that would somehow bring unity, that would somehow bring some people closer together. And it's a miracle that we're asking for, God, but I believe we need it, and I believe you can bring it. And I pray that over the next few minutes, God, you would give us a picture of the future that reminds us of the sober reality of the future to come. It's in your Son Christ's name. Amen. So when we talk about justice, when we talk about judgment, I believe that one of the reasons we're sort of obsessed with this in our culture is not just because it's a topic that's happening right now, but because all of us, Christians and non-Christians, no matter what your views are, we all have this longing for justice. And sometimes we say it like this: when are things going to be the way they're supposed to be? When is this going to be made better? I hear people say all the time, hey, if you believe God is so good and loving, how can a good and loving God let this bad thing happen to this good person? How can this tragedy take place? How can this shooting take place? How can this devastation take place? How can this diagnosis take place? And we just wonder, when is it gonna all be made right? And I believe that God has put that hunger inside of us. But in 2018, I think that that's not just a hunger. I think that those are Hunger Games. And I don't mean the movies and I don't mean the books. If you're not familiar, it's a series that talks about a future dystopian reality where the rich are separated from the poor, that systems and physical geography break those two apart as far as they can, that it's actually difficult to be able to even interact between the two, that there are systems and structures that make even the available resources very difficult to get your hands on for lower classes of people in the world. It's nothing like today, right? No, the Hunger Games that we're gonna talk about are the Hunger Games that this deep hunger and longing inside of us for justice, how it can be distorted in our own mind and in our own heart and our own soul. Because we take the way God would have us view it and we just shift it just a little bit. And the way that politicians and news media take what's happening in the world and your and my hunger for things to be made right, and they play games with it to maintain their own power and to make money. And I know that for a lot of us, the idea of that hunger is nothing new, but if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, you may not know this, but you've actually been given a pair of lenses to view life through. As a matter of fact, when you become a Christian, if you make the decision to follow Jesus, you get to see life through a totally different perspective. That when you see circumstances that other people see as hopeless, you can see as hopeful. When you see difficult challenges, when you see roadblocks, you can see God's purpose either specifically or broadly. You know, hey God, I can believe that there's something on the other side of this. I can believe that you're gonna use this for my good and for your glory. That's what the glasses you and I are supposed to wear are. And when we wear these glasses, the biggest challenges in our world, they seem different than when we don't. As a matter of fact, I'm going to show you some of the things that the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on over the next few years. And in 2018, I'll just let you know, this is a trigger warning. Like, you're going to be triggered by some of these things. Because these are really big topics that we don't all agree on. And that's okay. But when we think about the things in our world, like gender inequality, whether that's in the workplace or in the broader marketplace, or we think of the implications in the Me Too movement of people who have been abused and are just now brave enough to say something about it, or what we currently understand as the abortion laws in our nation and the fight for dignity of the unborn at the same time as we preserve rights for women. How do we balance that as a culture? How do we manage the criminal justice reform that's necessary in our nation with overpopulated, privatized prisons? How do we handle the historic worldwide and specific national racism that we see? How do we understand LGBTQ rights that have both been granted by our government and continue to expand? And how do we as followers of Jesus, if you would say I'm a follower of Jesus, how do we defy the cultural norm that says in order for me to love you, I have to love everything about you? When in reality, God says I love everything that's true and deep and most important thing about you, but I don't have to love everything in your life. How do we manage that with a community that so quickly feels hurt, that so quickly feels ostracized? And what are the implications of the court going to be on that community? And then for some of you, gun rights have been an increasing topic of intensity and concern. Whether those should be made more restrictive or should be made more loosened, no matter what your view is, these are all topics that we're gonna see decisions get made about in the next generation by this Supreme Court, and the justice that's getting put in place is going to be a significant voice in those decisions. Now, are you viewing those through these lenses? Here's what I would guess. My guess is that for a lot of us, the lenses of faith that we wear, those lenses are sitting on a shelf somewhere. Maybe those lenses are sitting by your Bible somewhere. Maybe those lenses are collecting dust somewhere in some past moment, some past difficulty, some past diagnosis, some past crisis. You wore them for a season because you needed them, because you wouldn't have been able to get through those days without them. But when life became a little bit more settled, when things felt a little bit easier, you said, God, I got it. I don't need those glasses anymore. And without realizing it, it's not that you didn't wear glasses, you just put a different set on. And after the 4th of July in the United States of America, unfortunately, I think a lot of us put on glasses that look like this. And the lenses that we view our life through, are the lenses of politics. And we don't realize it, but the lenses of faith, those lenses give you and me hope. They give you and me purpose. They see a way out. The lenses of politics, when these are the primary ways that we see the world, these are lenses of fear. These are lenses of control. These are lenses of polarization. And what happens, and you don't even necessarily always know this, is that the politicians that want you to wear these lenses, they primarily want you to do that so they can maintain power. And the media, they primarily want you to wear these lenses so that they can make money. God wants you to wear lenses of faith because they actually help you, and they can actually help the people around you, even if it changes the way you think, even if it changes the way you see. And so over the next week, I would encourage you, in a difficult conversation, maybe tomorrow after the pick is made, and you find yourself getting frustrated, you're talking about to somebody that they disagree about it, or they have a different viewpoint, and you find yourself getting heated, ask yourself this question: what lenses are you wearing? What perspective are you bringing to that relationship, to that conversation? Are you frustrated and angry and fearful? Or are you trying to find a way for the hope that God has made available to the whole world to be available to that person, to that conversation? This is such an opportunity for us if we will seize it. But you know, the challenge for a lot of us is that this is one small part and we can feel it, right? The Supreme Court is important. The Supreme Court justice that's about to be nominated could potentially serve for a generation, but there is a judge that will serve and judge every generation. And I know that for lots of us, when we ask the question, why doesn't God make things right? Why doesn't God fix all of this? Well, he's going to, and he's got a really good reason that he's waiting. But I'm telling you this, my hope is that over this week and in the weeks to come, maybe as you ask yourself the question about which lenses you're wearing, whether you're a Christian or not, that you'll come to understand this, that our hunger for justice will be satisfied in the Supreme Judge, not the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's important. It matters. It's not that you shouldn't know about it. It's not that you shouldn't have conversations about it. But when you have elevated the role of the Supreme Court above the role of the Supreme Judge, you are missing the point. So we're going to look at a passage in the Bible that is a very, very important passage. A passage that actually a lot of people ask me to preach from the book that it comes from all the time. They say, hey, when can we do a series in Revelation on the weekend? Probably never, just to let you guys know. And the reason is because what people really want is they want a study of the end times. The $30 church word for that is eschatology. You're welcome. You can sound smart to your friends. And it taps into the prophets in the Old Testament. It taps into the specific prophet in the Jewish scriptures named Daniel. It taps into Jesus' life and what he said. It taps into the letters that were written in the early church and ultimately Revelation. It would take years to study. But my encouragement would be if, as we talk about this, your interest is piqued and you want to learn more, there is a book called The Four Views of Eschatology. Go read it. It's a pretty thin book, but it'll allow you to begin to chase breadcrumbs in a direction maybe that you think, I want to learn more about that. What we're going to do is we're going to step into one moment in the future. We're going to step into one moment in the revelation of John. And John is one of Jesus' followers, and you know, a unique thing about the followers of Jesus is that except for Judas, who betrayed Jesus, was ultimately the one that got him arrested, all of the other followers of Jesus, as they were beginning the church, were ultimately killed for their faith. They were murdered. They were martyred for their faith. And John was the only one that wasn't killed for his faith. And it wasn't because nobody tried. As a matter of fact, there is a historian in the first century named Tertullian, and he writes about the martyrdom of John, the attempted martyrdom of John. And it happened in a Roman Colosseum, and it was full of people, and they put John in a vat of boiling oil. It was one of the most painful ways to kill someone. And the crazy thing is, nothing happened to him. And Tertullian, this first century historian, not even in the Bible, he says, everybody in the Colosseum became a Christian. Like, wouldn't you? That's crazy. And John, he goes on from there, and like after that moment, you're like, what do you do? Like, I don't try to kill that guy again. Like, I don't. That's what I would do. I don't know about you. They exile him to this island of Patmos. And one of the things that's unique about John is he was this amazingly faithful follower of Jesus, but he is describing future events in Revelation. He's describing this vision he has given to him by God about the end of the world. And so everything that he's seeing, he's describing through this early Jewish convert first century vocabulary. Like that's the vocabulary he has to choose from. And in addition to that, the entire New Testament of the Bible is written in the language of Greek. John is not a very good Greek student. So when you learn Greek, you learn John first because he's so basic, he's so simple. And I love that God used John to write Revelation because I think sometimes we look for all the little layers and all the little specificity and we try to find all the little I's and T's to dot and cross in how the end of the world is gonna happen. And I think that one of the reasons that God used John is because sometimes it's simpler than that. Sometimes the message that God wants to show you and me is simpler than that. And I think that's what we're gonna see here for just a few minutes together. But I will warn you, as I looked at these verses this week, I normally spend 5 weeks preparing, I've spent 5 days preparing this one because of the way we're doing this series. And I have never shed more tears preparing a message than this one. And it begins with John taking you and me to the judgment seat, showing you and me this moment in history. And in this moment, at the judgment seat, with the first century vocabulary and a beginner's level Greek, John says this. He says, then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. From his presence, earth and sky fled away and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne and books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books according to what they had done. Now, where this sits in the book of Revelation, there's been a bunch of things that have already taken place. As a matter of fact, this is just before the time that Jesus, in the next chapter, is going to recreate heaven and earth. He's going to recreate the entire universe the way that you and I long for, without sin, without brokenness, without disease, without pain. And before that happens, he has already brought back together, he's already reconciled the relationship between every man or woman that has a relationship with him, that has turned from their own way and decided to follow him. That's already happened. This judgment, the white throne judgment, is for people who do not know Jesus. And they are coming before this final judgment. And the scene that John creates for us is mind-blowing. I mean, he talks about a scene where he sees this great white throne communicating God's power and God's purity and God's authority to do this very thing. And he says, as I see this throne elevate, I see the universe run away from him. I see the universe run in fear of the judgment that's coming. And in that moment, John sees every single person brought before Jesus, before this judgment seat that doesn't know him. And there are these two records that are brought out. One record is probably the deeds that people have done, and one is the book of life. And the way that a lot of us think, even Christians sometimes, that it works is that we're gonna stand before God, and he's gonna look at our good, and he's gonna look at our bad, and if our good outweigh our bad, then we're good. But I've got really hard news for you. There are gonna be people on this day that have a lot of really good things that they've done that get reviewed. But if their name is not in the book of life, is not in this book that identifies people who have turned from their own way and believed that Jesus is the only way and began following him with their whole life, doesn't matter how many good things they've done. And that is devastating. I mean, when we look at this situation, my hope is that if you're a Christian, this is not like a beat the chest moment and you go, yeah, I'm still looking forward to this day. I can't wait when I see that family member, when I see that friend, or when I see that coworker that's been ridiculing my faith and has been saying, God isn't real or God isn't good or I'm wasting my time. I can't wait to see them. No. That is not the heart of God on this day. See, the future that all of us want, of a universe, of an existence with God but without sin, it requires God to deal with all sin. And so for some of us that are Christians, the way he's done that with us is that he's died in our place. He's taken on the penalty for our sin already. And the way he's going to do that for people who have not made a decision to follow Jesus is they themselves cannot enter this new reality. They will spend their eternity separated from God. You know, this is all conjecture, but I wonder, you and I, if you're a follower of Jesus, we have already been dealt with. Our relationship with Jesus has been restored. We've been brought back face to face with him. And I just wonder, what is it going to be like if you and I get to have a visible audience of this moment in the future? What's it going to be like if we're just sitting over the shoulder looking at the judgment seat as every single person comes before Jesus? One of Jesus' early followers, Paul, he says that actually at this moment, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord. And so as they get ready to take a knee, no more arguments, no more debates. Is God real? Does he love me? Is there a judgment really coming? All that's gone. And I just wonder in that moment, are there going to be faces that come before God in judgment? And as you see them look up and you guys make eye contact, who are you going to see? And are they going to look at you? And if they could have a conversation with you in that moment, would they say, I knew faith was important to you. I knew this mattered. I knew you went to church sometimes. I knew faith was a thing, but like, I didn't know this. I didn't know this was coming. I didn't know this was my future. We were neighbors. We were coworkers. We were family members. And you didn't tell me this? See, all of us, we want what's on the other side of this. We want a life and a future and an eternity in unity with God that doesn't have sin, that doesn't have brokenness, that doesn't have pain. But I'm telling you, that justice, it will not be delivered to you by any politician or by any Supreme Court. Your hunger, my hunger, our hunger for justice will be satisfied in the Supreme Judge. As a matter of fact, this moment is not just about a seat. It's not just about the setting. It's about the fact that it's Judgment Day. That when we look at this moment taking place in real time, as John looks at it, and for a God that lives outside of time, he sees everything as though it's happening in real time. To God, this is happening right now. It's as good as done. And as John gets a look into this future moment, he continues on, he says, and the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. Now, when it talks about death and Hades, Hades is the way that they would have understood death at the time. And actually, they would have thought about it as the term grave. It's not hell. Lake of fire is more what you think about as hell, which is this eternal separation from God. That if you're not in the book of life, if your name is not printed in there, if you do not have a relationship with God, it doesn't matter what else you've done. You'll spend eternity separated from him. Most commentators believe that what's taking place here as each person comes before God, it's not like a normal court case. You're not going to be able to present evidence. You won't have any to present. You will be faced with the greatest judge you have ever seen, the supreme judge in which the rest of the universe is running away from his judgment. You will not make an argument. You will not have a counterpoint. There will be no appeals. There will be no stay of execution. That on this day, this is the sentencing hearing. What most believe is that the deeds that you have in your life, even if you don't know Jesus, they will determine the nature of your separation from God for eternity, but you will be separated from God for eternity. And I don't know about you, but when I think about this, I just think, God, how can you be like this? How can the God of the universe be like this? Where is the mercy? But you know, earlier this year, I was watching a movie, and the character in the movie said a line that I thought, that is way more profound than they realize it, and it was the movie Black Panther. And in the movie, Black Panther is facing one of his villains, Claw, early in the movie, and he has him pinned, and Claw says, "Mercy, my king, mercy." And Black Panther says back to him, "Every breath you take is mercy from me." And I just thought, that's all of us. See, our species has committed cosmic treason every generation since we existed. God would have been justified to have given up on us generations ago, but he didn't. He gives you and me breath every day. He gives you and me life every day. Whether you say I'm a follower of Jesus or I'm not, we don't deserve life. But he gives it to us anyway. And maybe for you, you're asking yourself, you're not a Christian, you're like, "Phil, this is crazy. I can't begin to think the way you're talking about." Phil, what if you're wrong? What if I'm not? What if this historic event that Tertullian tells us about 2,000 years ago is true? That John, they tried to kill him and they couldn't, gets exiled to Patmos and he records this experience that confirms all the things that we've seen documented for thousands of years in the Jewish scriptures in the early life of Jesus, that judgment is coming. What if that's what's really in front of you? See, our hunger for justice will be satisfied. It will be in the Supreme Judge. Not a justice that serves for a generation, but a judge who judges every generation, so that the world that we long for, so that the reality we all hunger for is possible. And so, you know, when we look at this and we have this experience, lots of us will say, if you're a Christian, you'll go, "Well, you know, the end of the world, I know it's going to be really challenging. There'll be really hard parts to it for lots of people, but I know God and I'm glad for that. And I want to know Jesus." And if you have kids, it kind of changes a little bit. You're like, "Hey, I really want to make sure that all my kids have a great relationship with Jesus before anything happens. Like, I really want that to be the case." And when they do, you're sort of like, "Oh, phew," you know, it feels a lot better. And let me just tell you this. I think that feeling of going, "God, you know, just wait, I want all my kids to know you. I just want all my kids to know you." I think that's a divine feeling that God has given parents, because I think he feels the exact same way. See, lots of people early in the church, as they were experiencing greater and greater persecution, they were saying, "You know, God, are you listening? Are you around? Are you paying attention? Have you fallen asleep on the job? You said you were coming back. You said this was going to all be better, and it's not better. You're not back." And so one of Jesus' followers, Peter, he wrote a couple letters, and in one of those letters, 2 Peter, he actually talks about this exact moment, this exact judgment, and he shows you and me why God is waiting. When you ask the question, why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do atrocities happen all around the world? Why are things devastated? Why do you get the diagnosis that you can't do anything about? Why does God continue to allow all this to happen? Because he wants his kids to know him first. So Peter, he's writing these words to the early church. He's just begging for Jesus to come back, begging for the end of the world. And he says, "But do not overlook this one fact, beloved, that with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years as one day. The Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, unexpected. You can't prepare for it. And then the heavens will pass away with the roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done on it will be exposed." Nothing will be hidden. There will be no debates. There will be no discussions. No one will say, but what about this? But what about them? But what about when? No one will do that in the face of this judgment. And to God, he knows in his eyes, outside of time, it's already here. And if you want to know why God is waiting, it's because he's patient. It's because he knows that when this judgment comes, there's no more time. And the stakes are too great. And the incredible thing that we see documented in the New Testament of the Bible is that to satisfy God's own justice and holiness, which are characteristics that make him God, to satisfy his own justice and holiness and yet have you and me in relationship with him forever. He had to use his own life. Jesus himself had to satisfy the holiness and justice of God. His love compelled him to do what, frankly, we couldn't earn. We don't deserve. That kind of love from God for you and me is unbelievable. And so if you're like, Phil, but you don't know how difficult my day has been. You don't know how difficult my week has been. You don't know what I'm facing in my life. I am so ready for this world not to be like it is. And I'm just telling you, the reason that God is waiting is because he's patient. And if you're not a Christian, the reason that God has not come back, the reason that judgment has not occurred is because he's being patient with you. Because he's just longing for you to finally get it. For you to realize that this is not a fairy tale. For you to realize that he gave his own life for you to know him. If you're a follower of Jesus, everything's great. Everything's working out for you. Just go, God, I'm ready. You know the reason that he's waiting? It's because he's being patient with you. Because you have so many people in your life who are close to you, but so far from God. And he doesn't want to see you, see them face to face on that day with regret in your heart as they go to be separated from God forever because you weren't faithful. Because you didn't get it. In just a second, we're going to sing a song that we've been singing for a couple months. And my hope is that for some of you who have never made a decision to follow Jesus, that this song will maybe remind you or tell you for the first time that God's love for you in the face of his own justice and holiness is unbelievable. He would leave the 99 to come get you. He would lay down his life to get you back. And if you've never made a decision to follow Jesus, maybe in the next few minutes you will. All it is just a decision that you make to say, Jesus, I'm going to turn from my own way and I'm going to accept what you've done for me, the life that you have made available to me by your death and resurrection, and I'm going to live my life following you. Over the next few minutes, maybe you're going to make that decision where you are. I hope you do. And for some of you that are followers of Jesus, this song is going to be bittersweet because it's not only going to remind you of the love that God has for you, but the love that he has for your neighbor, the love that he has for your coworker, the love that he has for your classmate, the love that he has for your spouse, the love that he has for your child. And if you've been sitting on the sidelines saying they're doing their own thing, it's okay, it'll all work out. The same love that God extended to you, he's extended to them. And the judgment we just read about is coming. Let me pray for us. Jesus, would you give us fresh eyes to be able to see the world as you see it. That it's not that these things don't matter. It's not that these issues aren't important, God, but they're not as important as you. They're not as important as the ultimate judgment that you will deliver to the entire world. There is a new day coming, and I believe we are closer to it today than we've ever been. And these are not popular topics, and this is not a popular position to take, God. Lots of churches we could go to that would say something different. But I don't believe it would be true, and I don't believe it would be loving. God, would you refine us right now? Would you shape our hearts as we remember your love for us? It's in your Son Christ's name.